John, tag, you're supposed to run after me after I touch you. You can't. That's not how tag works, the way you're playing.
It's a regional thing. I'm playing Midwestern rules.
Oh, I should have known that. Okay, yeah. My bad. Yeah. Sorry.
Hey, speaking of, Dave, you know, with Memorial Day coming up,
I'm guessing you're
probably getting ready for plenty of fun days in the sun.
Oh, my gosh.
Am I right?
First, I have to learn these rules for tag. But, yes, everyone knows this, John. Everyone knows that time in the sun is best enjoyed with a pair of shades that you don't have to baby.
Oh, yeah.
Knockaround is the original affordable sunglasses company, and they've got just what you need for Memorial Day weekend, MDW, for those of us who celebrate all year, and all the way through summertime.
They do. And with over 20 different frame styles, there's something for the whole family, including tons for kids.
So, whether you're looking to rock a pair of red, white, and blue shades for the big weekend, or just to restock your collection before summer gets here, Knockaround has you covered.
Now, Dave.
Yeah.
Did you know that all their lenses have UV 400 protection, which is basically like sunscreen for your eyeballs?
Oh, man. And I've put copper tone just right on the old ojos, and it burns. It is burning still to this day.
Yeah, well, you keep putting it on.
Well, it's a habit. With polarized adult pairs starting at $28, you can get a few pairs to leave in your car, toss in your beach bag, or lend to a friend in need.
You know, Dave, where I come from, Memorial Day weekend means it's race day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and
oh,
there's no more important place to have some shades than outside at the track.
Oh, yeah.
If you've heard me say that once, you've heard me say that a million
it's
times.
It's on your front yard.
I think I might actually just buy a pair of Knockarounds in that color.
Yeah.
Like in the color of each car, actually.
Yeah.
And it's switching back and forth based on who's leading the race.
Love that. That's one of the best ideas you've ever had.
So listen, Dadville fans, take that idea and run with it. Also, don't be the one squinting through family beach days or trips to the park. Go to knockaround.com and use the promo code DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order.
That's DADVILLE15 for 15% off your order at knockaround.com.
I just said that.
Hi, I'm Dave Barnes.
And I'm John McLaughlin.
And welcome to Dadville.
Dadville is a podcast where we talk about life, love, and the pursuit of awesome dadding.
It's funny thoughts and deep talks.
So please, enjoy your time here in Dadville and enjoy this episode with...
Sissy
Gov. Folks, we're just going to jump right in today.
Let's
Sissy, we're going to what do they say? Dispose of the pleasantries.
Oh no!
Because folks,
I've never heard that phrase before.
Thank you. I read a lot.
Do you?
I do.
Dave, what are you reading right now?
Yes. So the Bible. I don't feel Sissy's Bible.
New book.
Oh, Sissy's new book. Of course, I'm reading.
Come on.
We've been doing this a long time. We read each other's minds.
And that's the only thing we read because I didn't know it. Hey, see what I did there? So everybody, we have, is it the co-mayor? What have we told
Y'all gave me my own title.
What was it?
Oh, what was it?
He's the mayor. You're the governor.
The governor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Wow.
I don't know. I'm going to go with that.
Okay,
that feels good
on
Monday.
Huh? Okay.
We're excited to have you back.
I'm so excited to be back with y'all.
Of the echelon of people that we have on Dadville who know what they're talking about, there is a Mount Rushmore of those. And you and David are two of
them. Yep, two of them.
Wow.
Yeah. You each have,
you're
on there
four
twice.
Four heads. You both are on there twice.
It's like happy Sissy,
no.
Mad Sissy, happy David, mad David. We're thrilled to have you back.
I'm so glad to be back. And now I feel like I'm officially friends with both of you. So
definitely.
I used to be nervous.
Oh, why?
I don't know. Because y'all are so funny, I can't keep up with you.
I want to say this. It's a burden and it's a blessing. And that's what people don't know. They just think, what's it like to just be who you
hilarious,
are?
And both of you.
It carries a weight. It carries a very real weight.
Yeah, sure.
So you do have a new book out.
I do.
And now I'm realizing I didn't write down what it's called. And that's how professional I am. And I was just going to riff until it came to me.
I will say I am the worst at remembering titles of books.
Oh, y'all.
I know it.
It's The Worry-Free Parent.
Oh, John, that was
close.
Good. That was it.
That was it?
Yes.
The Worry-Free Parent.
Yes, that's good.
Yeah, The Worry-Free Parent.
Yeah.
In the subtitle.
That doesn't count. I just said it.
Living in confidence so your kids can't too.
Yep.
Boom.
Dave only remembers the subtitles. He doesn't remember.
So I'm great with movies on Netflix. So obviously, I can't think of, which I'm assuming is one of the reasons you wrote the book, a more applicable thing to write about in this day and time that we're living in. So I want to jump in and do this because I feel like people, if they've clicked on this episode, they're like, the less that Dave and John talk, the better. Let Sissy talk.
Yep.
So here we go.
So far, we're not off to a great start.
We're already abusing our power already. So Sissy, we are. I have to say this formally. These people like just Sissy Goff, who is a Nashville legend, a huge part and helps run Daystar here in Nashville, which we love and participate with. Okay, so one of the things I kind of want to start here. These are facts that you've said and we've that are part of the book that we've talked about before, but I think worth saying again. 1 in 4 kids today is dealing with anxiety. The average age for the onset of anxiety is 7.
Yes,
which is crazy.
That blew my mind.
I know, makes me sad.
Yeah, and it's both of my kids, like my youngest just turned 8. So as I read that, I'm like, well, it's done.
Yeah, it's like
it's too late.
The door is.
Oh, no.
If I would have read this years ago, I would be like, okay, there's still time.
I can stop it.
I can stop it. But it's like, no.
No, it's too late. I was too busy playing tennis and mowing my yard in that door.
And making coffee on Instagram.
And I'm terrible at both. I'm not even good at either one of those things.
And then this is very crazy to me. Girls are twice as likely to suffer from anxiety.
Yeah, yeah. And thankfully, I have 2 girls.
Yeah, so John is coming in hot there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And boys are taking to get help more.
What?
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I want to guess why that's inferred, but you tell me why it is.
I want to hear your guess first.
Because I think it is not culturally normal for a boy to feel things. So when they do, we need to fix them.
Yes.
Where a girl, it's okay if they feel things.
That's definitely part of it. Yeah.
Dang,
Dave,
that is interesting but wrong.
No.
Which would be the name of my book.
That's definitely a small, small part of it. So small that people don't really say that.
Dave, I asked a 5-year-old girl the other day, and that's exactly what she said.
Y'all.
And English is not her native language.
No, I think that's definitely true. And I think for boys, often it comes out as anger.
Oh, gotcha.
And so
the way it
parents
presents.
Are more alarmed.
Yeah, that's a great.
And anxious girls are typically very well functioning. They're the ones in parent-teacher conferences that the teacher says, I wish every child in my class acted just like your daughter.
Jeez.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And so they just fly below the radar. And I think they're hard at home, but parents just think, oh, something's wrong at home, rather than she has anxiety.
Wow.
Huh. Well, you know, I mean, with our girls, Amy and I have said before, like, they are...
Tell Amy I said hi.
I will. You might see her later on today, actually. They are angels at school.
Yeah.
And then when they can come home, my sweet little angels of daughters are not necessarily the easiest, you know?
I like that you had to say daughters.
Yeah.
Just to really get Amy out of the...
Yeah. My girls. But I've always felt like as hard as it can be at times, I'm like, I'm glad that the house is a place where like
the lab.
They can function. Yeah, the house is the lab. They can go
That's
to school
a good word.
And
I've
function.
Never heard that.
And even when I say function, I want to stop and be like, it's not like I want them to put on some performance or show when they're at school. I don't want them to be inauthentic, but they can sit in class, they can listen, they can do their work, they can, you know, get along with other kids and adults. And then they can come home and they can kind of let their emotions fly.
Yes.
Which I feel like is a healthy sign somewhat.
It is.
Your face.
Right?
It is. And that's, yes, John, you're so intuitive as a dad. I have known that about you for a long time, and that is exactly right.
But you're well
it's
and
good and healthy and
most
a compliment
of what I say,
to y'all.
Most of what I say is just I'm repeating something Amy said. But I'm like, I never would have thought of that. But you're saying with girls who struggle with anxiety, they often look on the outside exactly what I just described about my girls.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Delightful, kind, bright, conscientious, all of those things.
And why is it that they struggle so much more than boys do?
That girls are more anxious? I think there's never been as much pressure on girls as there is.
Wow.
And I think there's pressure in general, but I think girls, it resonates differently with girls.
Like, what is that pressure?
Well, I mean, we could certainly talk about social media, but I think it starts way before social media even comes into play. And, you know, it's like the amount of kids now in Nashville, if you're child is going to private school, there's a test called the ICE. Mm-hmm. The amount of kids that I see that are having anxiety about the ICE and in tutoring about the ICE, which never used to be a thing, not judging anyone who has their kids in tutoring for the ICE. I get it. But it just, it feels like that whole kindergarten is the new freshman year in college.
Jeez.
You know, academically, there's so much pressure. They're supposed to excel at everything they do. I think that kids don't know how to define themselves, I think, in a lot of ways anymore, and so they're looking for places to do that.
Do you think some of that is because we've talked about this? Who we just had? Somebody we had on. We do so many. Anyway, no, but we were talking about how that shift from generations, and I think our generation is so much more child focused.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Which has
that
to
was,
be
Dr. Morgan.
That's right. Cutlip. That's
yeah. 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 Mm.
But just, you know, I do wonder if that some of that is just that it, now we're so child-centric.
Yes, we are.
That they just feel the pressure,
the pressure
of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything also to, you know, the fact that so girls are twice as likely to struggle with anxiety than boys are? I feel like boys are allowed to be disagreeable. More than girls are, would you say?
Yes.
Just in general.
Absolutely.
It's like the boys, if they are going against some kind of grain, whether it be the grain of their household or the grain of their school or the grain of whatever, there's this sort of, I don't know, subconscious like, well, you're a pioneer. You're your, you know,
he's
you forged
cowboy.
Your own way.
Wow.
And
this will be good for him later in life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And girls maybe are
supposed to
subliminally
please and be compliant.
Given, yeah, be agreeable.
Right. Which I do think culturally, it's fascinating to me because I feel like we've never talked as much about empowering girls. We've never talked about helping girls be honest, talk about their feelings. And at the same time, I'm not seeing it trickle down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's as much in our messaging sometimes as I think it's just what they're absorbing still somehow.
Yeah, even at the osmotic level. Yes. Just like, this is how
I don't know what that word means.
Well, somebody said...
I had to say it today to Annie.
You pronounced it correctly.
Yeah. Thank you, yeah.
Somebody said the other day on some interview that I was listening to, they were saying, we do have seemingly more than ever all these messages to women, empowering women. That's great. All of that is great. They were saying when girls, women in various spaces actually start to own into and step up and take space, we don't actually like that. And their point was if men, and they're speaking very generally, obviously, but if men really believed in this movement of women being empowered, there would be some natural threat behind it.
Mm.
And his point was, we don't feel like there's really teeth in this. It's more lip service being done because we're not threatened by, like, yeah, women run the world. There would be a natural, like, well, wait, hang on a minute. Like, if you guys are really going to come in and start changing stuff, we would feel more threatened by it, you know?
That's fascinating.
Well, I mean, you know, our culture, patriarchally, has been the world. It's the history of the world. So it's you can't come in and say, like, women are about to take the baton. It's like, no.
Yeah.
This is the thousands of years of being this way. It's not like all of a sudden some really smart, wonderful, leadership-oriented women are going to be like, oh, it shifted overnight. I mean, it's literally the Titanic. You know, it's like Rome wasn't built in a day, whatever you want to say. But it's how we all think about it, whether we like it or not. Everybody. You just think that way. It's like, so, I mean, I think turning that around would be so, and it can happen in small things, but I think we underestimate how much our world is set up in the way that it's set up.
Yeah, I agree. And also that I think when we say some of the things that we're saying, which again are all, I'm all for it. I think sometimes we don't think, okay, let's think of an example where this actually has real world teeth, where this is really actually going to impact our world. And then how does that feel? We got to be okay with that too. We got to see some of those changes, you know?
Well, this may be a whole side thing, but I mean, where I would like to see part of the change is there is this fascinating thing that happens that I watch happen every summer with kids where, you know, we have this little summer retreat program for kids in counseling at Daystar called Hopetown. And we have something for the second through fourth and fifth and sixth graders called Man School.
Oh, wow.
And these guys, they're so cute. They get so excited about it and they learn to shake hands and tie ties. And I think Aaron teaches them to cook and they use the blower. I mean, I don't know all the things they do. Talk about conversation, how to have conversations, so many different great things. So we have struggled over the years with what to call the girls' equivalent.
Oh, wow.
Because if we called it woman's school, girls wouldn't want to come.
Really?
There's something little boys feel like, I get to be a man. David tells a story when we do the Raising Boys and Girls seminar about, I won't tell the whole story because David should tell it some next time he's here, but about this boy who's entering puberty and the dad says, when this happens, I want you to wake me up. We're going to have a steak dinner because God's making you into a man. It's this beautiful story. And we were teaching together one time somewhere and some woman came up to me and she said, okay, so I tried to do that with my daughter. And I said, you know, when you start your period, I want you to come and find me and I'm going to buy you a purse and we're going to go celebrate because I'm so excited about the fact that God is making you into a woman. Mm. And she said, my daughter said, really, Mom, we're going to celebrate the fact that I'm bleeding.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. And I think there's something for girls about becoming women, that there's this, maybe shame takes it too far, although I think there is a little bit of that. But but definitely it's an ambivalence. It's this, I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
What are the really good things? And so I think, I mean, I think obviously culturally we need to do some things, but I think in our homes we need to do some things.
I woke up this morning and there was a thought that I couldn't shake.
Okay.
I mean, I ate my cereal. I was thinking about it. I went on my run. I was thinking about it.
Yeah.
I watched you go on your run. I don't know if you knew that. And I was thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know your car. You were right next to me.
You kind of ignored me, so I didn't know if you knew I was there, even though I bumped you a couple times. How was your ankle, by the way? Here's the thought I kept having.
Yeah.
Knock Around is the original. That's exactly how it is in my head. Knock Around is the original affordable sunglasses company offering quality shades that won't break the bank. That's what I was thinking the whole morning.
Yes. I could. You know what? I could tell you were thinking it.
Yeah.
When you were in your Lambo, the Gini, as you call it.
The Gini, yeah.
I could see kind of through the tinted windows, and I could tell, you know what? He's thinking about Knock Around.
Yeah.
You know, and let me add to that, because Knock Around sunglasses, they're available in 17 different frame styles. All right.
Yep.
Also, a ton of different color combinations and are offered with both standard UV 400 protection and polarized lenses.
And here's what I don't want you to forget, okay?
Okay.
Knock Around also has kid-sized sunnies for the little ones.
Never forget that.
And they're always releasing new sunglasses, so check out knockaround.com for latest releases. I was thinking about that.
Dave, I'm already there.
Okay.
You think that I'm like reading this on my phone? No. I'm at knockaround.com.
Oh, well.
Okay, and look, a new release just in time for the playoffs in October.
Oh, wow.
Major League Baseball Premium Sports Sunglasses.
Do they have Dodgers, Yankees, Cubs, Cardinals, the Dragon Fighters, Kung Fu Johnny, and the Get Back Girls? All my favorite MLS teams. Yeah, okay. And all with team logos and colors.
That sounds like a grand slam, Dave. Just to use
it.
I'm keeping the sports references
going. Killing it.
I might just have to order a pair of knockarounds for the whole family.
I dare you. Way to knock it out of the park. Come on. We're just playing a little verbal gymnastics here. It's not really gymnastics. It's more ping pong.
Ping pong. Yeah, there it is. Yeah. Pickleball, if you will.
Pickleball. Thank you. Tennis. More current. Now, can I ask you a question though, really quickly?
Please.
How can our listeners find their favorite pair?
Okay. Look, here's what you do, all right? And now I'm speaking directly to the listener right now.
Okay,
Since you are a loyal Dadville listeners, you or listener.
Yeah, no,
plural or singular. If you're single, if you're married, dating, whatever, you can head over to theknockaround.com and use the promo code DADVILLE15 anytime, but do it now, for 15% off your order.
Yeah, go to knockaround.com and use the promo code DADVILLE15 for 15% off your first order of an awesome new pair of sunglasses.
Oh, you did it.
Woo, man, that was awesome.
You successfully ate 3 banana cream pies in under 1 minute.
Oh, man.
Amazing. And I was counting slow.
Well, everybody said I couldn't do it, but I knew I had it. I found a rhythm.
Yeah.
It was on. I mean, you know, John, it's just that's the most unhealthy thing I probably could have done in under a minute. But am I regretting it? Yes. But am I a little impressed with myself? Also, yes.
I couldn't agree more, yeah. Dave, honestly. But,
John, do you know what the healthiest thing you can do in under
a minute? Oh, we're going the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
Spectrum.
Yeah, yeah. I want to teach you a lesson.
100% I know. Oh, that's easy. Should we say it at the same time?
Yes.
AG1 by Athletic Greens.
John and I gave AG1 a try because we wanted increased energy, better gut health, and we wanted a supplement that actually tastes great.
Now listen, Dave, I don't know about you.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
But I take AG1 while I'm making my morning coffee.
Ooh,
it's all
respect.
One thing. You know what
respect.
I mean? And I love that it helps me with improved digestion. You know how much I want to improve my digestion.
You talk about it all the time.
All the time. Mm-hmm. And my sleep support.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Plus, why take a bunch of different things when you can just mix one scoop of powder and water every day?
I know. AG1 is powerful because it's so easy to fit into your lifestyle. The all-in-one formula makes it easy for you to cover your nutritional bases every day.
And AG1 is delivered to your doorstep. Again, we can't stress this enough. They're not going to leave it in the yard.
No.
Or put it 2 doors down. Even if they did, though, that it would be a great deal because it's worth it.
They're not going to put it in the mouth of a neighborhood dog and then slap the rear to watch it run off.
Right. No, it's not the 90s anymore. They deliver it right to your doorstep every month, so it's been super easy to make a daily habit of it.
Well, you got me in the Google box, John. If you're looking for an easier way to take supplements, AG, that's right, Athletic Greens, is giving you a free 1-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase.
So go to athleticgreens.com/dadville. That's athleticgreens.com/dadville. Check it out.
It's so funny because I was like, what would be the equivalent of that for a guy? Obviously, there's not, there's a lot of physical things that are happening, but nothing like what a girl goes through.
Yes.
But I think, you know, the equivalent to me is like where you would sit and say to a woman, like, you're taking on all this responsibility, it's hard. There's a million things you'd say to a boy, I think, in the same way, which is like, God, Christ calls us to be the chief sacrificers and repenters as men, right? Like, that's as the dad. You want to lead your family, it is hard and like terrifying and vulnerable. And so I think the thing that gets, I think in that moment, the miscommunication can be like men, we seize and we go, where it's like biblical manhood is just as terrifying because it's like, it's going to be against your inertia almost all the time. You know, like with Adam, you think about Adam, the silence of Adam, all those things. Like,
yes.
You step into pain, you step into, you don't run, you, and instead it gets marketed as kind of like Mad Max and Thunderdome. It's like you get to be the guy that's like out there just swinging and going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where it's like, no, it's like this is hard and terrifying as a man.
Yeah.
But because I think society, to your point, is marketed men as this certain way, it looks a lot more fun and irresponsible. Mm. Mm-hmm. And more given to your beast and not the nuances of engaging emotionally and leading vulnerably. And, you know,
it's so, a little simpler.
It's much simpler, like. Much simpler. So, okay. So anxiety.
Yes. Yeah. We got off track of that, I guess.
I want to say this. I think one thing I noticed about this book that's really fascinating is it really is, and you're going to laugh when I say this, but it really is written for parents.
Yes.
Because I think if you look at what you've written, what you and David have written, you know, it's like for parents with the trickle down,
right?
Which
so
this
for
is
for parents about kids.
There we go.
And this is for parents.
This is for parents
about you.
About you,
not you, but about
well,
parents.
Well, no, you can when
general.
You looked at me that
it's
way.
About Dave. When
hurt?
I was reading it, I
it
was
hurt.
Like,
and I'm just gonna say that. I want to say that out loud. Being vulnerable, and being a vulnerable man, it hurt. But I think I thought that was really interesting. First of all, is just to realize this isn't a book that's like, Because I think as a parent, it is so easy to read those books because it's kind of not about you. It's like how you do a better job, but it's about your kids. This is interesting because it's like you are like, no, mom and dad, I'm looking at you and how we can do what we need to work on. And I think that is significant. And I think people that are reading this, it's a little more like, oh, here we go.
Maybe a little more painful. It's, I know.
There's
I
work
hope,
to do
I
there.
I hope there's so much grace in
no,
it.
No, but I think it's so necessary because I think the thing that I love about what you're doing in this book that I learned that morning of March 27th that you talked to us in that church was profound. I think about this, I mean, every day since then, about this idea that like you are the chief, and I think I knew a version of this, but not near as succinct as you did that morning, which is the idea that you talk about in this book. Like, well, I'll just say it this way. Kids of anxious parents are 7 times more likely to battle anxiety themselves. And what that, if you walk that out and what you told us that morning was like, your kids are going to be looking at you for kind of how to feel.
Yes.
You know, and so I remember your charge to us that morning was like, hey, when you unite with your kids downstairs here in a minute, like the first thing you're going to want to do is just go crazy and cry and hug them and hold them for hours and hours. But if you can, and I loved how you put this, if you can, try to be as composed as you can, be appropriate in how you're feeling, but they are absolutely and will be. And you really charged us this way. They will be looking at you going, am I safe? Am I okay? Are you okay? Because how you feel is really going to determine how I feel, how safe I feel. And should I be worried? Should I be scared? All these things.
And do I need to take care of you?
Thank you. I haven't even thought about that. Mm-hmm. But that's another true thing. So I think the thing that's so powerful, one of the main things about this book that I love is that you're really going like, hey, this part of parenting is sort of managing your own thing because your kid is, I mean, I will never forget. It's one of the most succinct memories I have of those first couple weeks after that morning. I mean, it felt like at any moment that Annie and I could do a sweep of a room and I would find 2 little eyes like sticking staring at me because it was just like, they were just like, well, you know what I think about when you say that? Good. Okay, we're good. And I mean, it was some of the most poignant memories I have of that day, of especially of Xana, just like she would come. Annie would cry or I would, you know, and she would, hey, are you, what's going on? Like, are you okay? Why are you crying? And it was like, should I be crying? Are we crying? And so I think the thing I love about this book is you really do set that up so well. It's like, this is the truth, parents. Like, if your kids are struggling, there's probably a good chance you may be struggling. And so doing that work there, and I love this question, would you say that the most impactful way to curb your kids' anxiety is working on your own?
Yeah.
That's
I mean, so would you say that if you have a child that is dealing with anxiety, you shouldn't even think about them specifically? You should, the
I
way
would
to
say
curb
start
it.
Start with yourself.
Ooh, yeah. Shot across the bow.
Amy, are you listening?
That is let's walk that out. So for the parents who are listening to that going like, okay, what do you do? Like, what are the things you would encourage them as parents to sort of think about?
Well, I feel silly saying read the book, but
yeah.
I mean, read the book because I think it feels like what I would be doing for the first several months in counseling. Mm-hmm. And so my hope is that can really change the game for you. And if not, if you start to do some work or, you know, say you don't have access to the book and you just want to journal and start to think through, I do think it helps for someone to ask questions in a way that not only, I mean, I think what's, the hard part is there are several pieces to it. We've got to figure out why it's happening in each of us before we can really change it. But then we need tools to change it as well. Mm-hmm. And we need, I mean, anxious thoughts, which is, you know, it impacts our thoughts and our bodies so much. Anxious thoughts have so much power that we also have to figure out how to replace them with truth, I think, before we can be freed up from it. So it impacts us in several different levels. So it is a hard journey to go on, I think, alone, without a therapist or without a book or without a good friend that's done their own work that can help you work through it to a certain point.
Yeah.
So for the listeners who are thinking, okay, I have, you know, one of my kids is, well, let's even leave that out. Let's just say that they're thinking, okay, do I struggle with anxiety or am I just, because in the book you talk about fear, the differences between fear and worry and anxiety. Mm-hmm. So can you kind of distinguish between the two of those and what are some ways in which listeners can can determine, like, okay, I think in this, with these behaviors, this is just fear. This is just a normal, healthy fear. Or is it actually anxiety?
Well, I think with fear, we're only afraid of something if it's around. I hate spiders, but I don't feel, I can talk to y'all about spiders all day and I don't feel anything in my body,
right?
You know,
that's a good point.
And then worry, I think, is a little more, it hangs around a little bit more, but it doesn't, we can worry and then move on from our worry. Mm. And I think probably, truth be told, all of us are worried about something in any given moment.
Yeah.
You know, we could each list three things right now that are somewhere tucked away in the back of our mind.
Right.
But I think for anxiety, we can't tuck it away.
Hmm.
And so I went to the fair. Did y'all go to the Nashville Fair?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I went to the fair yesterday. And it was awesome. And it made me laugh because I always talk with kids about the one loop roller coaster. And I was standing beside it yesterday. But the intrusive thoughts, which are a hallmark of anxiety. So worst case scenario thoughts, I really blew that kind of thoughts, whatever it is. Mostly past and future thoughts come in and they get stuck and they go around and around and around and around.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even for fear, often it leads, if I see a spider, I'm going to go kill the spider. You know, it leads us to action.
Wow.
It's more linear and it's really an adaptive mechanism that God has given us. But anxiety is just circular and it goes around and around and around and around. Yeah, it's stuck.
So one of my daughters right now has a lot of anxiety around the weather.
Yes.
This is a, I'm hoping, one of my questions in here was how do you know if your kid is dealing with just a developmental phase that's coming out as anxiety? And I don't even know if that's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping it is, because maybe then that would be this.
Grow out of it, yes.
It seems like, so with this fear that has just come on like, like a monster in the last couple months.
It does that.
It is completely, it's like irregardless of whatever information she has.
Mm-hmm.
Like she wants to look at the weather app every single day, definitely every night before she goes to bed. And she's getting, you know, maybe she'll be a meteorologist because she's getting pretty handy with the radar. She is like zooming in. She's like, I can't just see the hourly thing that Apple gives you. I need to go down to the radar. I want to see.
Look at what's coming.
But it doesn't matter what those things say.
No.
I mean, lately it's like the weather's been amazing. I'm like, sweetie, this is perfect weather right now. Like pretty soon we're all going to be miserable and cold. Like right now is the time to be happy about what you're seeing. But it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And she, and I know that I do this with different areas of life. It's like, you just can't, there's got to be one more, like, can I check one more email that will give me? So it's like this false sense of that information will remedy the anxiety, you know? So how do you combat that? Because obviously I can't go to like another weather website and give her more information.
It's
what
is
it that she needs from me? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah, those are called safety behaviors, and they're the things that we do. And the danger is that kids, that we start to rely on the safety behaviors more than we rely on ourselves, which is the opposite of what you're wanting for her. And so, I mean, two things. One is, one of the things I talk about in the book is how anxiety is always searching for context. And so right now, weather is her context.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be in 4 months, it's getting sick becomes her context.
Yeah.
I mean, and so I think if a context comes and a context goes and she's fine, then I would say it's a phase. But if now it's about this, and if in 6 months it's about throwing up, right, then I would say, I don't mean she has clinical anxiety, but I would say she leans that way, which means she's conscientious and she cares and she tries hard. It's all these beautiful things about who she is. And we live in this age that it is just crazy rampant among kids, especially girls. So I think number one, I would say we want to get her away from weather apps. Because it's not about the weather.
Yeah.
It's about the fact that anxiety is hijacking her body and her mind in those moments. And so teaching her skills that she can use, whether it's about weather, whether it's about throwing up, whether it's about getting on an airplane, it doesn't matter. Those basic, like, breathing, grounding techniques, those kind of tools work no matter how it shows up. Mm-hmm. But she's got to trust those tools more than she trusts the weather app keep her safe. And number two, my tendency is to think when it comes up. So unless, I mean, I think there's something that happens around that 7 or 8 year age that just developmentally, the way their brains are growing, anxiety sets in. There's also something that happens right around puberty that it kicks up again. Like if I could do a graph of when I see kids, girls the most anxious, it's those two times.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes it's really a brain growth, brain changing onset, cause of onset. But also most of the time, I think when you can really get girls to talk about underneath the weather issue, she's struggling and feeling like my friends think I'm annoying right now. Or mm-hmm. I don't know how to make new friends, or not you, but something else is going on in my home, or there's something. I think for most of us, when we're more anxious and our thoughts are looping more, I think there's a deeper emotional issue at root.
Right.
And that's what we've got to really get toward, work on
and
help her be aware of. Because it's much easier to talk about the weather and look at the apps because I feel in control of that. But I don't feel in control of the fact that my best friend doesn't want to sit by me anymore at lunch, right. And I don't know what to do.
John, Dave. I can't believe it.
Whoa.
I cannot believe I'm coming in hot. I can't believe it.
Scalding hot.
Butchie Bobo, Double B as we call him. Butcher Box has done it again. I remember last time we talked, I said, I bet they won't do it again.
Yeah. And I was like, well, they probably will.
They probably will.
But you were pushing back.
Because they've done it so much. I'm like, how can you do it again?
Right.
I feel like all the time I'm searching for good deals on premium meats. And until I found Double B, Butcher Box, I was going up empty, John.
I totally know what you mean. I tried all my local grocers, all of them, even in the greater Nashville area.
You came to my backyard.
I did. I started there and then kind of went out in concentric circles. And none of them could match the options or the deals that you can get at Butcher Box.
It's the best, John. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. I love that Annie and I want to have you and Amy over, which we ask feels like every day, and you guys are always busy with the same.
It's our busy season right now.
Okay. Well, when we ask you to come over for, and I even put this in front of you, beef and shiitake broccoli. Uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh. Stir fry. Yeah. I'm really trying to get you. I don't have to worry about heading to the grocery store, even though y'all don't come. It's all right there. I can just make it right in my freezer if you don't come.
Is this a formal invitation? Like tonight?
It's always an invitation. Okay. It's always.
Okay.
Invitation.
Well then, Dave, listen, maybe one of our topics of conversation at dinner can be how impressed we are that Butcher Box is 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chickens. These chickens are so free.
They're crazy.
They're crazy free. Pork-raised, crate-free, and wild-caught seafood.
And guess what else is free, John?
I've refused to guess.
Delivery.
This is too serious.
Delivery.
No.
Right to your doorstep.
No.
And we say this every time, but they're not just throwing it in the yard. They're not giving it to your neighbor. They're not a block off going, oh, I've read the wrong. They're giving it right to your doorstep, John. And box plans are customizable in both size and frequency.
That's crazy. You know, a variety of high-quality cuts at an amazing value. That's how I describe the whole thing.
Yeah.
Plus, exclusive member deals, recipe inspirations, guides, tips, and hacks. Now, Dave, it's time to tell our listeners about their special deal.
Okay, Double B, Butchie Bobo. Butcher Box is giving us a special deal. Sign up today using the code DADVILLE to receive ground beef for life. John, let me tell you what I want for my birthday, GB for L. And I say every year, ground beef for life. And Annie's always like, oh, how about a massage? I'm like, no, I'd rather have the GBL. Plus $20. Plus $20 off your first order.
They have done it again.
Yeah.
People, that's 2 pounds of ground beef free in every box for the lifetime of your membership.
Yeah.
Plus, I stumbled over my words because I'm just so taken aback. Plus, $20 off your first order when you sign up at butcherbox.com/dadville and use the code DADVILLE.
Man.
Dave, I want to give a shout out. And when I give a shout out, I always laugh because it just brings me so much joy to give a shout out to Claritin.
Yes.
For supporting this episode and providing us with free samples.
You know it, John. This time of year, my allergies are in fuego. They're always on the attack, but I use this and you should too.
Oh, I do, Dave. Every day in our house. Yeah. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D.
Designed for serious allergy sufferers, which is me raising my hand, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill to relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better.
This double-action combination of prescription-strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, and itchy nose and throat and sinus congestion and pressure with ease.
John, I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for a long time, and it's been an absolute life changer. I can go for a run without my eyes watering. I may be crying, but it's not
from
allergies.
Totally different.
And I can sing without feeling like I have a big old, let's not even call it a frog. It's like a toad.
It's like a family of toads.
It's a family. It's a turtle.
Yeah.
In my throat.
So, you ready to live life as if you don't have allergies?
Yeah, me.
It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter.
Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed.
When you're talking about the tools and the breathing and the grounding and all that stuff, it's like I'm so grateful for Daystar and the fact that she can go talk to someone, because I'm sure a lot of other parents feel this way. I could give her tools. It's almost better if I don't even introduce tools, because it delegitimizes them,
right,
in her eyes.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I need someone else. If they say it to her, then she comes home and she has ownership over those tools in a way that she wouldn't if I had given them to her. You know?
And I think the best way you can do it is to say, man, I had some looping thoughts today about the technology. We were recording the podcast, and it was not working, and it was making me crazy, and
Dave,
I had to do my breathing.
Get it together.
Jay, let's just, here we go with David.
And I can't just give him the answers every time. He's got to figure it out on his own.
He is a pit bull.
But when they can hear you talking through the processes you're doing to work through your own anxiety, I think that's more powerful than, honey, right now I want you to go do this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this leads really well to a question I wanted to ask too. So how do you do, like, so as a parent who obviously, you know, you're going to have anxiety in your life.
Sure.
Let's say even the most healthy parent who's like, that maybe that's not part of their script in their life. As anxiety comes in, how do you model that? How are you honest as a parent with a kid when those moments come? And again, I don't mean to keep banging this drum, but obviously March 27th is a good example of this. Like, Annie and I had such an interesting, you know, and even now still, but really initially, it was so hard to know how much do you let your kids see your grief and anxiety? And then what part of you, as you struggle, especially with anxiety, what part of you has to kind of know, like, this is not appropriate for me to show them either my anxious, you know, whatever tendencies are, whatever. How do you model that in a way that's honest and real so that they have appropriate, I hate this word, but expectations, because they're watching you going, oh, okay, so I see Dad's anxious, like what you just said about John. Like, oh, he admitted that. And then what is it where it's like their little brains just aren't going to come? Because I remember something, I've thought about this so much, something that y'all kind of advised early on is just like, you know, if your kids come to you and say, hey, is this going to happen again? Right. Mm-hmm. That you were like, this is one of those moments as a parent where you just really play the odds and you just say, it's not.
Yeah.
And you really hope and trust that it doesn't, because more than likely it's not. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go, do I know that for sure? I don't. Mm-hmm. But right now, for where you are developmentally as a child, it's just me being honest or being, it's not going to help this situation.
Right.
Like, could it? Sure. I mean, anything can happen. But, you know, how do you manage that as a parent? Like, letting them into that, what you struggle with, not being disingenuous, but knowing, like, obviously they're kids. There's only so much that they can handle with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's true of any big thing we're going through as grown-ups with kids watching.
And
I think, really, I would say there's a difference between talking about your feelings in front of them and processing your feelings with them.
Wow. Geez, that's good.
And so to say, I felt really sad today and I needed to go for a walk, or I needed to go write in my journal because one of my friends wasn't very kind to me. that's going to make them feel like, oh, my dad has trouble with his friends sometimes. Yeah, that's so normal. I'm okay. Mm. But if then you say, and then this friend did this, and I thought, I want to, you know, like get into the weeds of it. That's not helpful for them. But I think especially with, well, really with any emotion, when we're talking about the things we do to cope, it teaches them healthy coping strategies.
That's great. That's really great.
And so to say, I felt worry rise up in me, and these are the things I know to do, and I forget sometimes, but here's what I did. And it was so helpful.
That's great. That's really great.
Are there like certain, you know, general benchmark ages for things like that? You know what I mean? I find it really helpful whenever, you know, through the years, if one of the girls has been dealing with something or it's really been a problem because they can't, whatever it is, they can't empathize or whatever. And then I'll read one of y'all's books and it's like, well, the age, you know, and up until this age, their brain can't even see empathy. Like, that's just not developmentally something that you should expect from them. Mm. Those, I find that to be so helpful.
Yes.
You know, because then it's not, you're not expecting something from your kid that they could even be doing, you know, developmentally. So are there some general benchmark ages where, like Dave was saying, like, up until age whatever, you play the odds and you're just like, you got to give them a black and white answer. They can't conceptualize odds at all, even that, like, well, probably this is not going to happen. But you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So not really processing your feelings, but when they're asking big questions.
Yeah, when they're asking for just a point blank answer on something that, you know, as you know, I know as a 40-year-old, the complexity of that question, but they're like, just give me a yes or no.
Right.
I need to know. When I go to school tomorrow, is that going to happen again? You know?
Yes. Yes. I mean, they are very black and white. You know, it's funny. I think post-COVID, I have a harder time saying until X age.
Okay.
Because it has really honestly slowed everything down developmentally. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, elementary school kids are definitely black and white in their thinking. Preschool kids, certainly. But there are going to be kids who move out of that earlier.
Hmm, right.
Adolescents or not. And so I think with younger ones, yes, no, that will never happen again. I mean, any kind of black and white answer, I think, is more helpful for them and is going to make them feel secure. Now, if they press you, then I think it's okay because kids always need to feel like you're truthful in an age-appropriate way. And so if they press you, I would give them a little bit more. But that whole idea of let the kids lead with their questions is really important because they ask the questions that they're ready for the information.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't ask, they're not ready. So if you give a more black and white answer and they don't ask anything else, then I would let it go.
Yeah,
because that's all they can handle in this moment.
That reminds me of the video that you made back in March after the covenant that was so helpful, where you said, just answer, I think I'm probably butchering what you said, but answer the question that your kid is asking.
Yes.
Which is hard for us as adults.
Infer,
because we hear a certain question and we know the huge scope of the event.
Right.
And so we bring in so much other stuff that they're not even asking. They're just asking this one-to-one ratio of a question.
Right.
Which I think is tricky for parents to just to stay that focused. And
well, it's weird because I think it actually
is. Because our anxiety makes us want to talk
exactly.
more, too.
Exactly.
Right.
Get out of my head. so a couple more questions. You talk about this in the book, like giving grace, and I think especially as a parent, when we think about our parents, or being parents, like how you talk about like parents worry, and that there's a, like a sort of a good version of that, like we worry because we care, kind of. How, like, can you just speak more to that, especially the grace part of that? I think about myself, and I can really beat myself up about, why does this stuff bother me? Why do I care so much? But like, you know, can you speak to that a little bit for the parents who are like, maybe get a little down on themselves because we do worry?
Yeah. Well, your quote was, giving yourself grace is more important than trying harder.
Mm. There you go. There you
Which
go.
I thought was, that was nice to read. I mean,
yeah,
someone giving you the the okay to give yourself grace mm-hmm. is really powerful.
Yeah. Well, I've never seen parents putting as much pressure on themselves to get everything right as I am today, and feeling as discouraged in light of that. And part of even coming up with that statement was, I know when I am not giving myself grace and I'm just screwing myself into the ground and trying hard, I get angrier and angrier at myself. Mm-hmm. And that then spills over to the other people. I mean, I had a friend probably 20 years ago who said to me, and I'm an Enneagram 1, so I can have a lot of self-hatred. And she said to me, you cannot be that angry with yourself without the anger spilling over onto the people around you.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I think that is especially true about the kids that you love. And mm-hmm. so, yes. So I think when you as a parent can step back, whether you just got angry with your kids about getting out the door on the way to school and yelled at them, well, really, you got angry.
Is that hard for people? Sorry, that feels so fun.
I've heard. I see a lot of people struggle with that.
Sounds like Mandarin to me, but go ahead.
But I think when you can think, okay, I'm mad because I know they already got 3 tardies, and the 4th means Saturday school, and then they're going to miss the birthday party. I mean, it's good. It's the best of intentions, I think, sometimes becomes the worst of our translations.
Yes.
And so when you can back up and think, this is because I'm trying really hard and I love my kids, I think that can help us give ourselves more grace. And every parent blows it. You know, attachment theory, which is what we study the most when kids' brains are developing the fastest. So in infancy, we're doing a lot of studying attachment theory. Their brains are doubling in size in those times.
Jeez.
And what research says is that parents need only get it right 50% of the time. That's what attachment theory says. So any parent who's listening to Dadville is a great parent. You care enough to listen to a parenting podcast. You are getting it right 90% of the time. And so give yourself grace.
That was another thing I loved in the book was you said a couple times, like, just the fact that you're reading, you're holding this book right now means a lot.
Yes.
You know, that you are the type of parent that is trying to, you know, work on yourself and get better.
Yes. Yeah. And that you would listen to an amazing podcast called Dadville with two really thoughtful, intentional dads.
Say more about that.
I could talk about it all day long, y'all. Hey, you guys, I don't know if maybe David said this to you. It has been such a fun thing when we travel and speak now, how often parents come up to us, dads and moms both, and say, I heard you for the first time on Dadville.
No way.
Oh,
yes,
really?
It happens all the time.
So we have a couple of plants per city, and it's a $50. They you notice they're not the things. They'll just come in and leave, and that's usually because we've
cars running outside. They did their job. No, that's great.
It's
so
fun every time. And then we take it as an opportunity to be like, we love that so much.
You're just so kind. Can
I ask two more quick questions?
I know
you have to go. Okay, back to the earlier thing that we were talking about with my daughter and the anxiety with the weather. Of course, in the back of my mind, and I'm asking this because I know not selfishly for me because I want the answer. I'm asking it selflessly because I know that there are so many listeners listening that are in the same situation, so it's not for me. I'm of course thinking, where did I drop the ball? I dropped the ball at some point earlier that then she slipped and now is dealing with anxiety because I didn't create a more secure environment. And I also realize when I'm asking myself that question or when I'm telling myself that, I do know part of me is like, no, don't shame yourself because you're probably giving yourself some false sense of control over the situation. But I also don't want to let myself off the hook too easily. And I'm curious, is there something for parents maybe who are their kids are younger than that age of 7 where anxiety tends to, you know, creep up? Are there some basic things that could have been done, or that like some basic things that you should keep your eye on that kids really need that could walk them past that threshold on the right side instead of with a bunch of anxiety?
Well, signs start to show up as young as 4 and 5. And so I think if you have a firstborn, I mean, the chances they're going to have some degree of anxiety, it's like 95%, I would say.
Yeah.
If you have a firstborn. I mean, with your firstborn.
And if you have kids, you probably have a firstborn.
Right. Right. Thank you. I don't know how I messed that up.
Yeah.
So with your firstborn, and I mean, I think at least one of your kids in 2023 is going to struggle with it. And I just think we can't escape it in this day and time. As adults, I think they can't escape it as kids to some degree. And so I want you to let yourself off the hook in terms of causing it. I want you to keep yourself on the hook for helping them learn healthy ways to work through
it. That's a great word.
Knowing anxiety is going to be a part of their world. Because likely it's only going to get worse unless Jesus comes back or I don't know what happens.
Right.
We all become really chill. I don't know how that's going to...
Social media just goes away.
Right.
And I guess the constructive way to frame that question would not be what is the thing in the past that I did wrong that I can now identify so that I can specifically regret.
Yes.
It's more like I want to know what it is because more than likely it's a continuous behavior that I'm doing that I want to cut out. Is it this, the phone? Is it, you know, whatever
part
it is?
Of it. Yeah. It's definitely part of it. But I think, again, I would go back to the best thing you can do from early on is to use language like, I was worried today and then I remembered, you know, whatever scripture or truth you have to go back to that works you through it, that you're just walking those things out in front of them. You're practicing failure as a family. You're celebrating their wins and their failures.
Yeah.
Which is such a counterintuitive thing.
Right.
Because as a parent, it is so wired into our DNA to be strong.
Yes.
And to show the kids nothing is wrong.
Right.
And you can trust me. And some of that is wonderful, but it's wildly unhelpful a lot of times.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is, I do believe, a cultural thing. It's as parents, how do we become more vulnerable in appropriate ways, which is not normal. You had a question too.
Yeah. So my other question, which is kind of attached to that, is there, or do we know, this is nature versus nurture. So I don't know if there's really an answer, but you know, Amy and I were talking this morning, and she knew that I was going to talk to you. And so we were talking about anxiety and the girls and all that kind of stuff. And we're both like, you know, we feel like the anxiety, the things that we have anxiety about, Amy and I, as parents, we're like, we feel like it's not like we are just open books around the girls. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like the things, it's not like I'm talking about my anxiety openly in front of the girls, or I feel it. We feel like we keep that sort of hidden. That's a bad word, but for lack of a better word, hidden from the girls. And yet, the girls still have their level of anxiety that we're like, you know, where's it coming from? So our question was, are we just terrible at hiding it, and we feel like we're hiding it, but we actually aren't, and kids are just better at picking up on subtleties than we give them credit for? Or is there actual, like, genetic anxiety? Like, we are passing it along genetically.
Yes.
And they're just genetically predisposed to anxiety.
Yes, genetically, certainly, it is passed down. And they're really intuitive. I mean, it's both things. But I think you can do all the work in the world, and genetically it's being passed down.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
So it's both. But anxiety is the most prevalent condition among kids. It's also 1 in 3 grown-ups, but it's the most treatable. So there's so much hope. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what we need to end with.
Yeah.
Sissy, you are every woman. We are so
I'd like to hear
you
sing that real quick.
Thank you.
You're every woman.
Oh, wow.
We got to stop there. We don't have the budget.
Really good.
No, we don't have the budget.
thank you once
again. The worry-free parents.
Y'all.
Yeah.
Everybody thank you, worry-free guys. Parents. It's so fun to be with y'all. Yeah.